Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And I thought today's show, which is on, of course, metaphysics and spirituality and physics and science and other issues, should, I think, take us to other planets and other places besides just where we are right now. Why? Because this time of year, people do kind of center themselves very much on the happenings where we live, which is planet Earth. But at the same time, I think it's important to maybe get perspective. Perspective gives us a way of looking beyond our own issues and the both problems and promises we have from living in this world. And hopefully, gain some, we'll say, future ideas from what I can tell you and what I can project about human life on other worlds. Now, we've had shows somewhat resembling this, but I always tend to say different things in each show and to explain things in a little different way. So hopefully tonight's show will be of as great interest as it usually is, maybe more. And so let me begin by, first of all, defining what I mean by human life, because I'm not just talking about, like, well, is there life elsewhere? Yeah, well, of course, there's a lot of life all over the place. The universe is a creation of its own creator for the purpose of growing life, which helps to eventually grow the creator. So if you look at it from that perspective, life is going to be everywhere almost in some way. Now, some ways are way beyond ways that we necessarily understand or recognize. And in some cases, it's at the beginning, which oftentimes doesn't look much like anything. As planet Earth did, if we go back some 4 billion years ago or so, what was going on Earth didn't look much like what we would consider to be life today. Nonetheless, there was still the beginnings, and that's something for another show at a different time. By human, I'm talking about human beings are those parts of life that are the first parts that can recognize its own creator. That's the first definition of being human. And most of you know that if you've read stuff that I've written in the textbooks and other stuff, and you can say, oh, yeah, I know. But the point is that some people haven't, and some people have never even heard this show before, which wouldn't surprise me. And if that's the case, well, welcome. And realize that the most critical element we have as being human is that we can understand, we can recognize, that's a sense, so we can sense and then we can understand our own creator. And life that is less than means an inability to either recognize and or understand anything about its own creator, is something less, lower in life than human. Now, because humans can recognize and understand their creator, they at the same time have a great conflict. There's kind of a protection, you might say, in lacking consciousness or understanding. Ignorance is bliss for life that doesn't, because life is not responsible, therefore, in helping to co-create more life and the improvement of the existing life through the understanding of one's own creator. In other words, once you have this sense that we've got, and that all humans, by definition, must have, and exercising that sense with a consciousness or understanding, once you got it, you can't just say, well, doesn't matter, I'm not going to do anything about that, because it becomes a responsibility. It becomes like a covenant that we have with our Creator to exercise responsibility and to do so in ways that have consequences should we not. that lower forms of life do not have consequences for. You might say, oh, is that that business about survival of the fittest and all the evolutionary stuff? Yeah, that's right. Anything below human lives by a different, we'll say, code. The code is more based on forces of one force against either a form or another type of energy force, because energy and force are interchangeable, and that is in form or not in form, it doesn't really matter, but it is based upon what we would call evolutionary, and therefore is not responsible to anything other than its own existence and those of things similar to itself in terms of life or non-life. So we have this unusual characteristic, which is a wonderful thing. I don't want you to think, oh, gee, how do I get rid of this sense and understanding so I don't have to be responsible for nothing? Well, unfortunately, a lot of people have already done that. So don't go in that direction, because once you're human, you can't get out of it. And the results are pretty nasty, to say the least. What do I mean by that? Well, by the way, if you want to call in, you can. I'm not going to say them on air because you've got them right now. All of you who are listening and now have the numbers to call in, you know, in the United States and Canada, you can call in using the 800 number. You could also call in paying for it yourself if you want to, or going, you know, to that if you're in a different country and they don't have an 800 number. But in any case, you can call in and talk to me, or just say, hey, you're crazy. I believe in evolution for everything, including human beings, superhuman beings, anybody else. Well, you could do that, or you can say anything else you want to say. But I'm going to suggest, very strongly, actually, that ultimately humans have a undeniable, and unfortunately, maybe for some, a great responsibility that should we decide to ignore, there is a consequence by the very creator, created by the very creator, that we are choosing to say, well, never mind, I don't want to have anything to do with that. And that consequence is that we become under the edict of the consequences of the lower kingdoms, which is forces become invoked by ourselves, not evoked, but invoked from ourselves upon ourselves. Some people call it karma. You want to call it whatever you want, because it's just a consequence of our own actions. And it's also part of the physics of the universe. Now, I'm not going to go too deeply into that, but it's important to understand what I'm talking about when we get to human life and other worlds, to understand why things might be different than they are here on a collective scale. So here in this world, at the present time, human beings, us, have collectively, not on an individual scale, but collectively at the present time, chosen to ignore more often than to, we'll say, promote the idea, as well as in our actions, the full interaction of us together as a unit, that there should be more virtuous life, which is godlike life, and that we are participating as best as we can understand our own creator towards the producing life everywhere that is abundant and is as much a positive or sort of good kind of life based, again, as best as we can determine, like our own creator. So when we decide to do that, which has not occurred on Earth, I want to make that point, we become what some people in spiritual circles call a sacred world. Sacredness. It's a great word. I like the word sacred. And I think at this time of year, for some people who are following some kinds of religious holidays, this becomes even more critical. So sacredness is an issue that right now it's in contention in the world that we call Earth, and is mostly, but not completely, missing from how we choose as a unit, as human beings living in on Earth, to interact with the Earth and with ourselves. Remember, when I say life, that includes us. So if we say, well, I'm really, really friendly towards the whales, but I think I'm going to go ahead and do a jihad or something on some of my neighbors or some other people I don't like, and that'll fix them, because, after all, I don't like those turkeys. Then, in that case, we are doing a non-sacred activity, which will result in huge forces making us the product of our own, you know, unfortunate folly and stupidity. And unfortunately, it comes out towards us, not immediately, sometimes years later, in very negative and hostile ways, which reduces our life, but it may also reduce the whole life of the planet, because another important feature of humans on our world, I'm still talking about us, I'm getting to those other humans, but just let me get there. Humans in our world have recently, since give it the last quarter plus century, since about 1975 or so, have gained the upper hand, you can call it, of controlling more of life in the mineral, which I realize most people don't consider a life kingdom, but it is, the mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdoms. We have more control over those lower elements of kingdoms than not since that time. That made it so that we have greater responsibility, and should that responsibility be, we'll say, ignored or shifted to others, or for some reason just plain say we don't defiantly say we don't agree with it, the results are very negative, because the responsibility is so much greater. So the same actions before 75 of last century would produce less annoying and very hostile effects on humanity in general than they do today because of that factor. So things are getting tough. We're in a vice, and it's getting tougher and tougher for us to live irresponsibly. And you might say, well, good, is Obama right? Should we live like socialists and everybody kind of work for the common good of whatever our nation thinks? Well, here's the problem. The problem with that theory is that in socialism or anything similar to it, communism and Marxism and all these other isms, maybe even capitalism, is that one assumes that the system, which is oftentimes represented by a governmental body, is more virtuous than the individual people are and groups of the individual peoples are. And that's almost never the case in our world at the present time. It should be the case. The government should be a reflection of its people rather than some kind of standalone, authoritative, and then sometimes quite destructive entity. But that's the way it is right now. And even in countries that claim to be democratic, there's not much democracy practiced by the governments that claim to be democratic. That even includes, for those of you who are living here in the United States, the U.S. So while we propose this to be true about ourselves, it's unfortunately not. Therefore, we can't say that a type of system that is governmentally instituted is in reality anything more than, unfortunately, a thing of its own, and most of the time considerably darker than any, we'll say, subsystem of group within that own society. That's a scary thing, huh? Yeah, it has to do with averaging, because most of democracy today is based, unfortunately, on averages instead of people seeking to create the best that they can perceive. And again, this has to do with the mentality and consciousness of the humans in our world. We are in a very strange place, aren't we? And unfortunately, this strange place gives us an odd way of seeing human life and an almost nihilistic way of interpreting how life might, if it does exist, in other worlds. I said all this now. I've spent about 15 minutes or so explaining this, but because the rest of the show is going to be about life on other worlds, then I think we need perspective, as I started off saying. And if we don't gain that perspective, we may make a lot of wrong assumptions, and you might not be very amenable to hearing about life on other worlds when things here don't seem to be all that promising. Okay, now, why are we in such a sticky thing? Well, because we just happen to be chosen, we have chosen to be alive at this time, when there is a, we'll call it a severe series of changes and tests that are happening within all of humanity to bring this world around to a point where, somewhat through crisis, but hopefully not all through crisis, those are pressure issues, the evolutionary factors, all of life is brought into the spectrum of being somewhat considered by the highest life that's generally found on Earth, which is humans. And we are not doing that yet, but we're reaching a point where we won't be able to proceed. Now, that sounds scary, and we should be a little bit considering the consequences, because I think we maybe have less than a century to decide this whole thing. And if we decide in the wrong direction, it could very well be that this is a planet that won't be able to continue. No, I'm not saying that just humans are going to die. I'm saying that the planet itself needs humans to continue. Humans are an absolute necessary part. Our civilization brings, and on an average, because there's different ones, brings about the eventual acceleration of all life at our level and below, and we have to be here to make it happen. Other worlds have done a lot better. Now, let's talk about them. Our scientists today, based upon where we live in our particular galaxy, say about 1 out of 3 to 5,000 other planets, I call it 1 out of 3,000, I don't really care, it's just kind of an abstract number, are habitable, potentially habitable, by life that can exist as a human life form. But some of that's based upon their definition of human life, a little different than I define it. Most scientists do not use God or a creator as part of the definition of being human. They think we're just an extension of apes. And they think there's no change. But because they're using evolutionary biology, they aren't that far away, because it's evolutionary biology that comes back and gets us should we not follow our creator. And interestingly, they actually include the social issues in the formulas that they make, using a thing called a Pearson product moment correlation study of statistical analysis of how humans function. Oh, boy, is that a word. Defines the human interaction in comparison to life itself. Amazingly, they actually come up with something like what I said, even though they don't like spirit and God and all that stuff. It just goes to show you it's pretty hard to get away from it, even if you're a basically agnostic or atheistic type of individual. And not all scientists are like that, but I'm saying the act of being a scientist somehow disposes someone towards that kind of thing, you know, and it makes them more or less thinking they're more objective by not including those ideas. It's okay. We can live with that. All right, so even without having my definition, they've come up with very similar kinds of results that a planet will tend to destroy itself at a certain point in the creation of human civilization, if humans even exist, and it's right about the time where we are at. And this is not just ethnocentricity. It's not just based upon what's happening here. It's really based upon a bunch of statistical measurements of certain things that kind of quantify these circumstances. Wow. I bet you didn't hear about that unless you were into statistical study and biological studies. Some of the listeners probably have heard about it, but it doesn't matter. So we have this very interesting circumstance where there really is a nexus between some parts of spiritual principles, metaphysics, physics, science in general, which is what this whole show is about. And it kind of is right where we are at the present time. In other worlds, they've gone past our particular problem point. But it's still calculated that about only 1 in 3,000 or 4 or 5 or whatever planets that could have life on them. Now, this is a very sticky thing because not all planets everywhere in our galaxy could have life on them, life as we understand it. Because some are too close to the galactic center, some are too far away. There's only a nice, comfortable region where life would be as we could ever extrapolate it to be, which doesn't mean it is all cases, exist, and not just human life, all life, that it would be nice to be in. And we are in that zone. Now, within the zone, there's about 1 out of, let's say, 3,000, 4,000 planets that could, in the long run, have human life that makes it as far or further than we are. Particularly further is what we're talking about right now. So, what does that mean? Well, you might say, well, that's not very much. 1 out of 3,000? Oh, my. Well, okay, it's not very much, but you got to figure that there's something on the order of somewhere, give or take, like 1 billion stars or so in this region, probably more, maybe a few billion stars. And out of those few billion stars, there's potentially 10 billion planets. I'm not exaggerating. It's really a large number. And let's see, you divide that out by 1 out of 3,000. It's still an awful lot of planets that could have human life more advanced, equal to or more advanced than we are. And that's a lot of planets. And let me tell you, when you start doing statistics, okay, now a lot of people say, oh, those are just numbers. Well, they are numbers. I'll agree with it. But, the thing I like about them is because for most people, they can actually understand them when they're explained in verbal ways. Some types of math that doesn't make sense with, but with statistics, you can actually explain it. I'm doing that for you right now. And so there's a lot of planets out there. There are so many that it almost defies our logic to believe that there are no planets in our own galaxy. Now, I'm not talking about the other couple hundred billion galaxies besides us. I just talk about our own galaxy. There are so many planets that could have life as advanced or probably more advanced than we are in human terms on them, right around us. Remember, we're all in the same neighborhood because you go too far one way or the other, they don't even count. I'd already discounted them. So they're all pretty close by in astronomical standards, which is still very far away, by the way. They could be hundreds, even thousands, maybe tens of thousands of light years away, but they still are closer than a lot of other potential places in our own galaxy and way, way further away than any galaxy besides our own. So when you include this, it's a huge number. And that number almost says there's a virtual statistical and, in a spiritual sense, a certainty that there are a multitude of planets that have human life as advanced and most likely far more advanced than we are on them. Whoa. That's a big statement. And I'm telling you it in a way, I hope, that kind of makes sense. Now, you might say, well, yeah, but what about my religion? My religion says that we're, you know, God is right here, and we talk with God here, and my God is this God, and that says that this thing and that thing. How could that God be the same God in another world? And how about this idea that our limited capacity at our present level of consciousness leads us to understand our God through whatever level of consciousness we have collectively? And at the present time, our understanding of God is in a number of different ways we call either religions or philosophical religious ideas or whatever. And that's our interpretation of our Creator, and it means that we're just exercising what we are given in our ability to sense our own Creator. We have two spiritual senses. Those of you who have followed other shows know what I'm talking about. They give us a sense of God. And so we use them. And we use them in a way that makes some sense to ourselves, somewhat based upon our imagination, which is fine, and somewhat based upon certain reasonable constructs, which is okay. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's always going to be the same for all peoples. Now, I realize that creates some problems for us, but nonetheless, that doesn't mean that God doesn't exist in other worlds. It just means that our perception of God limits our ability to conceive of a God greater than the one that we have conceived of at the present time. That's all. That's it. It's our own limitations. Maybe my explanation in tonight's show will help us to conceive of a God much greater than the God that we presently, whatever our views are, perceives and creates and helps us and will say is the true creator of all that is. All right, so human life in other worlds makes complete sense then, if based upon everything I've said. And it's almost a certainty. It's almost a certainty. Nothing can be certain, because you could have a possibility where, well, maybe we're the only thing in the universe. There's hundreds of billions of galaxies. And I just tell you about this one, and it's almost a certainty. It's virtually statistical, has to be, that there are human beings, as advanced or more so, most likely more so, than we are, living around us, so to speak, in our own galaxy. Okay, then the question becomes, what is this human life all about? Isn't that what you're listening to tonight's show about? Yeah, I know. And I had to drag you through all this to get you to this point, I know. And we're just about done with this part of the show, I know. But the rest of the show is going to be, say, you know how I create these cliffhangers, you're going to be smart in radio, see. And the rest of the show is going to be about what that human life is like to the best of my understanding. And we can think about what the possibilities are. I think it'll be most interesting going through it and seeing how this reflects on our ability to conceive in the future and our ability to understand more and more of who we really are, which is a reflection of our own Creator right here and right now. As we get closer to understanding life in other worlds that is more advanced than we are, that is farther along in consciousness and its ability to sense its own Creator, we get closer to having contact with it. Does that mean that E.T. is landing anytime in the near future? Well, I don't think that's where I'm moving towards, but it doesn't mean that E.T. hasn't occasionally visited, but because it's almost impossible to both sense and especially understand anything that is beyond your own ability to sense and understand, it is virtually invisible to us if it had. That's right. Very interesting idea, isn't it? So you could have your next-door neighbors being, you know, the Coneheads, if you've seen that movie. And you probably wouldn't know it. That's right. You probably wouldn't, because your consciousness wouldn't be high enough to understand it. I particularly like that movie. Yes, all the way back to Dan Aykroyd and all those people 20, 30 years ago. Okay, So we will come back and be back in about 2 minutes and a little over that from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. I hope we're back. I heard some music coming on there. Anyway, let me continue on. I hope I'm on. And this is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And yes, tonight we're talking about human life on other worlds. And let me elaborate a bit more on this amazing subject. Hopefully everybody did hear the beginning of the show. And I think I've given enough information now to kind of be convincing that, yes, there virtually has to be, almost to a certainty, life not that far from us. I'm talking within light years to hundreds of light years around us that, for the most part, is greater than the life on Earth. And the reason for that is that once you reach the level of where we are, you either make it or you destroy yourself. Okay, so that was the point I was hoping to get across. I may not have quite gotten that to out there, but hopefully I have now. So here we are. We're in a difficult area, but the life around us is considerably more advanced on an average. And they won't have contact with us in any way because we couldn't recognize correctly, nor could we understand beyond even a minimal level, what and who they are, because our senses and our consciousness is too low to accurately understand who they are. And to have contact with us would only promote possibly some destructive element in our own existence and promote possibly a failure of this planet due to humans being destructive to themselves and other life on Earth. Okay, so they would kind of be leery of dealing with this. Not too different, by the way, than some of the scientists of our age and somewhat before this age, believing we should limit our contact with primitive peoples that haven't evolved in some way themselves, and our contact with them might be destructive to their civilization, what remains of it. So it's sort of like that, something of that nature. It's a little hard to define it because it's more unique than that, but nonetheless, that gives you kind of an example. All right, so I did want to mention that, you know, one of the things before we go off on human life in other worlds, many people have asked me, well, you know, you talk a lot about the natus system, which is like a correspondence to the nervous system, and all kinds of issues with health. And they asked me, well, what do you do to be healthy? And I do want to mention, you know, I don't necessarily follow a lot of parts of allopathic medicine. That's what most people say when they go into a medical doctor treatment they're going to get. Some parts of it I don't agree with. Some parts are helpful for short-term use, but not very much for any kind of long-term use. So sometimes I'll go see a chiropractor. I like a place called Mountain Vista over in southern Scottsdale around where I live. That's in a suburb of Phoenix, Arizona, for those of you who know where that is. And if you tend to go there, one of the things I like about them is their services, initially, the first time you go, they don't charge you for most of the services that they offer, which is really a cool thing. I'm talking about like x-rays and all, and examination and a massage and all kinds of stuff is free. To me, that's a cool idea, because you get to try before you buy, you know. So if you want to try them out, you can. And just, you know, you say, oh, well, I heard about it in the radio. Now, they're not paying me to say this. I'm just saying, you know, that it's worthwhile to go check them out compared to other places. So it's called Mountain Vista Chiropractic. And so if you're in this particular area, you might want to try them out. If you can find some other place in where you live that does something similar, that's a good place to go, because that way you know whether or not it's going to help you or not. At any rate, enough said about that. Let me continue on. We are in a circumstance right now where it is incumbent upon us to make some changes, but not along the lines of our government or what our governments think, because they are behind us, not ahead of us, in consciousness, because they come from the averages and sometimes below averages of what we represent. We've got to excel for the best we are, not the average of what we are. And some planets have really achieved this result. So human life in other worlds, as one example, has succeeded in creating a government body or bodies that no longer is just an average of the expression of the consciousness of the people that exist there. Their form of, we'll call it governing, is towards the highest standards possible from the highest of those within their societies. And it really just kind of gets into like the Platonic concept of the Republic, a book that was written by Plato, that the very best thinkers, the very best of those who have the highest consciousness ideas, the ones that represent our Creator in the most accurate way, should be those that we choose to lead us. Well, we don't do that yet, for the most part, here on Earth. But there are other worlds that do. And those other worlds have to do this, because they are at the point where if they continue to function as we do, they would destroy themselves, and possibly, who knows, maybe a few other worlds at the same time, because they have advanced technologies. So in order to get to where they are, we have to change the way we choose our governments, the way we choose our leaders, so that those who lead us are the most spiritually developed, not the least, or not the ones who, for some reason or another, are averages. And this is something that is really difficult, because on Earth right now, we have both of those. We have some cases, some governments that are led by tyrants. And those tyrants are, you know, dark, sometimes evil people, either collectively or as individual dictators, who represent the really some of the worst parts of human consciousness. And in other cases, there's averages. The United States is pretty much an average. And so we don't have we don't have the very best. And you could say, well, why don't we choose the very best? And part of that reason, because we do have a democracy of sorts, a part of that reason is that we are fearful of those that we can't fully understand. And those that are much more conscious than us, we don't fully understand, at least on an average level. So it becomes difficult for us to elect them. Now, you could say, well, how do you get around that? Because if what you're saying is true, then we're never going to get there, because we always choose people based upon how we think and feel. And the answer to the question is really, you can still perceive something greater than yourself, even though you don't fully understand it. Such as God. We do that with God all the time, don't we? Don't we perceive of God that is more conscious and more everything than we are? Even if you're in a traditional religion, isn't that true? We need to do something like that in the way that we decide who's going to be our leaders. Somewhat based upon their own performance and maybe regulating through the people side than through the governmental side, the outcomes. So when those we choose that we thought would be great leaders become more tyrannical, we just push the button and say, hey, we don't like this one anymore. We're going this direction, and we don't wait for disastrous results. I have suggested some parts of that myself in a structural sense. So I'm going to lead you now into what human life and other worlds would be doing, having to do, in order to survive. They have to have a structure of leadership that is so far beyond who we are, because it's even beyond where they are, and they're already more advanced than we are, the ones we're talking about. They would have to have a body of leaders, a governmental process, if you want to call it that, that is instantly responsive to its people, and that is so concerned about expressing virtue in its operation that it is the main issue in every decision that is made. Wow. That's a pretty remarkable kind of system. We could almost call it a spiritual oligarchy or something like that. Not necessarily a democracy by the standards we have chosen, but always so, because this group is so responsive to all that it serves that it will not be defiant or destructive to its own, we'll call it electorate. It seeks to have that all people and all life becomes more responsive to co-creating with its creator. And part of that creation, if you recall from other shows, is to not interfere with free will, to express and to help others to express creativity and freedom, and to have meaning and purpose in its existence first of all things, because that's how our Creator sought to create. And at the same time, to be loving and compassionate, all-inclusive and helpful, and not destructive to life in general, and to be helpful and cooperative in sharing, but only as it applies to the first principle of freedom and creativity. One of the problems in our present world is that we vacillate between these two extremes, but they aren't neither extremes. We tend to see them as such because we aren't able to incorporate them together. Well, on other worlds, human life has achieved this unity of spirit, I'll call it, in thought, and has almost perfectly meshed together these two parts of God's thought. And it has made it so that every decision, all the elements of their societies are equipped and expressive of there being the absolute maximum amount of freedom and creativity, while there's the absolute maximum amount of helping others to become more giving, more conscious, greater understanding, more able to plan and direct themselves while they're being free and they're being purposeful and creative. Wow. So that's the kind of world that we're talking about, that these other worlds have in general, on a universal level, commonality. Because that is the universal thought of God being expressed in a more open and direct and complete way that present than presently exists on Earth. And you might say, well, where do I get a ticket for there? Because I want to go. Well, part of the ticket of getting there is to create it here first. You can't go until you've done it here, because we are all souls chosen, we have self-chosen to be part of this rock in space in order to make it happen here first before we go elsewhere. Now, a lot of you are saying, well, I didn't choose that. Well, we are limited in consciousness, and we are unable to understand our own souls, much less the beings and souls that exist in these other realms, these other planets, some of them in different dimensions, even though where we live right now. But I am talking about those who live in the same dimension, to not confuse you. And still, of those that live in the same dimension, the physical one we're in, those people are functioning as souls. They actually have, as part of their consciousness, mostly the spiritual mind of their own creator. We do not. We came here as souls, some of us from more primitive worlds even than this one, some from more advanced worlds, to help create this here on Earth. Now, I hope that has inspired you. I'm going to continue on. Okay, then, if the very structure of the civilizations that we're talking about is first contingent upon what I just said, and the governmental structure and the leaders of those societies acts in accord with that structure, okay, that I just explained. So the governmental structure is in accord with the mind of God structure. Then the next thing that evolves or changes from where we are is that the technological and civilization types of, we'll say, expressions of human beings. And remember, human beings are the first kind of life that developed civilization, because civilization is an expression of the lower kingdoms being incorporated within our kingdom to expand our senses so that we can sense and we can express ourselves in ways beyond our own body and bodies and our own abilities. We use these other elements from the other kingdoms to make us greater. They do this as well, but they do it in a different way than we do. Since they are applying the mind of God, they only do so when every element that they take from one of the lower kingdoms, and they also work consciously with some higher kingdoms, one or two levels higher than human, to create a civilization or create civilizations, I should say, that are only helping to create more of life in the lower kingdoms at a higher level, closer to the perfection of the spiritual moon in those kingdoms, helping the group souls, it's called, of those kingdoms to be successful in developing the lower forms of life. So they are closer to being sacred in their ways of interacting among themselves as life forms and among all other life at the same time. They actually are directly involved in the evolutionary process. And they don't do so to be destructive for selfish reasons, but they do so because they are elective to be, we'll say, in a meaningful or super meaningful way, creators, co-creators within those lower kingdoms. That's what life is like on other worlds that have humans. Wow. Now you really want to go, right? Because that means when they make nuclear things, they don't make nuclear things that blow up everything and destroy everything and make pollution. But instead, they make nuclear things that helps all life to grow and doesn't destruct it to things. And it produces some very positive, super positive results without there being pollution and without there being destruction. Just using that as a single example. There's billions of examples. But I hope it's coming through what human life in other worlds is really doing and why we're not aware of them yet. Because they are so far advanced that we would only misunderstand who and what they are rather than understand them, unfortunately. It saddens me to think that, but it's true. Okay, so what else? Well, their expression of balance and their expression of beauty is so much higher than where we are that regardless of whether their direct focus is on creating life through beauty, everything they do creates more beauty in their world, one way or another. Wow. So their worlds are awesome. I mean, they're so beautiful. Not to say Earth doesn't have great beauty, but most of that came from our Creator directly. Humans have not created that much beauty. We have done some of it, but on a very small scale, and usually by individual, unique individuals, you know, individuals, but not on a massive scale. But massive-wise, we have done more of the ugly nature. But the wonderful thing about this is they have created beauty, true beauty, that is absolutely phenomenal. And they've also created science and truth that is incredibly, incredibly well-balanced and produces in itself more truth every time it is exercised. A truthful society that every time something is created and it produces more truth and not less truth. So there's no great, terrible contradictions in their monastic thought processes. And their imaginative processes and their ways of loving each other go so far beyond ours that all you can say is it's a society in which all are giving to each other because they all see one as being part of the other. Amazing place. And of course, they always cooperate and share. There is no want of the basics in life. There's no such thing as those who are terribly deprived because everything is provided at a minimal level as needed, but not because it's communistic, which really doesn't fit the model at all, but because it's spiritual and because people do it because it's part of their beingness. Not because it's part of some kind of ism, be it Marxism or some other. Anyway, you know what? I'm out of time. I can't believe this. Yeah, this is a show that could go on for a lot more. I hope that it's helped give some basis of human life in other worlds, made it maybe something to think about in this time of holiday season, and to give us something to really say that's something we could really move towards. For those of you who are interested in the quote-unquote, some people call it myth, some people call it reality of Atlanteans, you can find out more about that on December 21st from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. Mimi's going to be talking about it over at Mesa Borders in Fiesta Mall in the Phoenix area. Go hear her. There's no charge for that, and you can go hear it. If you're interested in the ideal cell sorption resveratrol for humans or pets, foreveryoungproducts.com, 800-777-7850. Give them a call. And Life Balance Association, if you're interested at all in soul balance, this is the time. If you're feeling ill, think about it. This balances your soul to your spiritual nature. 602-472-5127. We are out of time. I would love to go further. But until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.